Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's first quarter 2018 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak CEO, Alberto Sada, CFO, and Adrian Altas, Investor Relations Officer, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's Investor Relations website. I would now like to turn the conference over to Adrian Altas.
Thank you, Operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of our business and financial highlights. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss key industry trends and our first quarter financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we will open up for a Q&A session. I would now like to turn. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn over the call to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Adrian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's first quarter 2018 conference call. We saw better results this quarter, driven mainly by efficiencies as well as increased production of higher value-added products. Consolidated volumes were slightly lower, marked by two contrasting trends. On the one hand, higher volumes associated with V6 engine applications in North America, and on the other hand, lower volumes for diesel applications in Europe. Nonetheless, EBITDA and revenues increased 3.7% and 10% respectively, with the former driven by improved operational performance and the latter by higher aluminum prices and currency effects. I would like to highlight our operations in North America, where we successfully concluded of cost reduction initiatives dating back to last year. Thanks in large part to these efforts, we overcame raw material headwinds and achieve a positive result in the region. Notwithstanding the diesel headwinds I just mentioned, we also had a positive quarter in Europe, aided by the introduction of new programs for high-performance applications. We're already starting to capture incremental gasoline volumes to compensate for diesel reductions, and we expect to make further progress in this regard in the coming months. At the same time, we reaffirm our focus on structural and electric vehicle components as our main medium to long-term growth drivers in the region. We are seeing demand accelerating among OEMs as lightweighting and electrification replace diesel as preferred levers for meeting stringent fuel economy and emissions regulations. Moreover, given our technological capabilities and the experience we have gained in recent years, producing these parts, we are uniquely positioned to profitably capture a significant share of the market. Going forward, we expect that this segment will make a progressively greater contribution to our results, not only in Europe, but also in other regions. As we continue to improve operating scale and build up our dedicated engineering, product development, and sales teams. In terms of the quarter, I am pleased to share that we took major steps toward this goal on the customer relationship side, winning new contracts with North American and European OEMs spanning gasoline, hybrid, and pure electric applications. These contracts added up to a value of $50 million in annual revenues, bringing our total order book in structural and electric vehicle components to approximately $370 million in annual revenues. They also mark several important firsts for our company, including our first contract to produce battery housings for a leading Asian battery manufacturer, expanding our customer base beyond traditional automotive OEMs. Our first contract to produce battery housings for mass market vehicles for a German OEM, offering increased exposure to a fast-growing hybrid segment. And our first contract to supply pure battery electric vehicles in North America, allowing us to strengthen our position in new EV components. On top of the water business I just mentioned, we also entered into a collaboration agreement with a new Chinese OEM to develop structural components for pure battery electric vehicles, which could potentially become an important future growth avenue for us in Asia. In addition to complex castings, several of the above-mentioned projects will allow us to provide advanced secondary processes, including machining and assembly solutions, representing an additional path for value creation in the segment. With that, I will hand off the call to Alberto Sada, Nemak CFO.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. I will start my section by providing an overview of the auto industry performance in our main regions in the first quarter of 18, so you have a context for our results in the quarter. Regarding North America, U.S. vehicle sales remained unchanged year on year, beating industry analyst expectations. The positive situation of the U.S. economy was a key driver for the market. Regarding vehicle production, OEMs continued with their destocking strategy, showing 2.6% lower production year on year. Meanwhile, in Europe, first quarter 18 vehicle sales increased 3.6% year over year, also supported by more favorable economic conditions, particularly in Eastern Europe. Vehicle production figures saw little change. We continue to see a shift in vehicle mix as customer preference for gasoline vehicles over diesel accelerated in the period. Diesel share was 39% in the region, a 3 percentage point drop versus fourth quarter of 17. NEMA volumes for the quarter were 13.1 million equivalent units, a slight decrease compared to the same period of last year, as higher sales in North America almost compensated for lower sales in Europe. In turn, revenues were $1.2 billion, a year-on-year increase of 10% due to the appreciation of the euro against the U.S. dollar and higher aluminum prices. We reported consolidated operating income of $108 million, 4.4% lower than the year-ago figure. We observed several contrasting factors during the quarter. On the one hand, the adverse effect of metal price lag was more than offset by operational efficiencies, increased sales of higher value-added products, and currency effects. But on the other hand, the non-cash effect of higher depreciation and amortization associated with fixed assets investments of prior years, combined with a slight increase in launching expenses, more than offset the above-mentioned gains. Turning to EBITDA, we finished the quarter 3.7% higher year-on-year, reflecting improved operational performance. EBITDA per equivalent unit was $15, up from $14.40 last year. This gain was mainly driven by the positive effects I just described. Net income amounted to $69 million, a 3% increase over the first quarter of 17. Lower deferred taxes more than compensated for extraordinary financial expenses incurred in the early retirement of the 2013 bond, which we refinanced this past January. These financial expenses accounted for a little over half of the financial expense recorded this quarter. Capital expenditures totaled $106 million during the quarter. As explained in our report, we invested to support new program launches and to drive efficiency across the company's regions. Before explaining regional performance, let me devote some time to cover recent aluminum issues more in depth. Aluminum prices have shown volatility in recent months, driven by U.S. import tariffs on primary aluminum and the designation of Rusal, a major producer of aluminum in Russia, by the U.S. Office of Foreign Assets Control, reducing primary aluminum supply in the market. Regarding tariffs, the U.S. administration proposed 10% tariff on aluminum imports. Has no direct impact. The U.S. administration proposed 10% tariff on aluminum imports has no direct impact on NEMAC exports, as the measure applies to raw materials, raw aluminum, but not to our part. Nor do we see any impact on U.S. operations, as all our U.S. plants are domestically sourced aluminum. In terms of supply, the Rosal situation does not have an effect on NEMAC, as purchases from this supplier amount to approximately 5% of our total aluminum purchases, and we are in the process of redirecting purchases to alternative suppliers. Rosal supplies primary aluminum, and our main raw material is secondary aluminum. The above two circumstances have contributed to extraordinary volatility and price increases in the primary aluminum market. Our contracts allow us to pass through price changes to customers with a corresponding temporary metal price lag effect, which we have described in the past. Lastly, As explained in the previous call, we are currently in negotiations with customers aimed at reducing the divergence between primary and secondary indicators that we're experiencing in North America. We are making progress and will keep you posted on any relevant new developments in future quarters. Now, let me cover our regional results. As mentioned before, the North American auto industry maintained a historically high level of vehicle sales while reducing production to lower inventories. Nonetheless, our volumes for the region grew on the back of the continued ramp-up of new programs, in particular P6 applications. Our revenues in North America region were supported by aluminum prices as well as volumes, showing a 7.5% year-on-year increase. EBITDA for the quarter was $121 million, 4.3% higher than last year on the back of increased sales of higher value-added products, operational efficiencies, and the impact of from metal price lag. Turning to Europe, we reported a 4.4% decrease in volumes during the first quarter of 2018 due to lower diesel vehicle sales, which more than offset higher sales of gasoline vehicles. Nonetheless, first quarter 18 EBITDA increased 9.4% year-on-year as foreign exchange gains and operational efficiencies more than offset lower volumes. Our volume in rest of the world was stable in first quarter of 18. We saw lower production in China, whereas Brazil recorded higher volumes on the back of new program launches. On a year-over-year basis, rest of the world revenues increased 10% due to higher aluminum prices. However, EBITDA decreased by $4 million due to additional launching expenses in South America as we're getting ready for growth in the region with higher value-added components. With that, we will open the call for Q&A. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. On your telephone keypad, a confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. And again, that is star 1 to ask a question at this time. Our first questions come from the line of Juan Tavares with Citi. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, everyone. So my first question is on your total volumes and revenues for the quarter. I'm curious if you can maybe help us digest of how much of that came from structural and EV components. And second, just on your margin that you reported of $15 per unit, I'm curious if there is still a gap in this margin due to the metal price lag, or maybe another way to ask the question is, what would be your margin if you had your costs for aluminum passed through to the price today? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Juan. The first part of your question related to what is the current volume that we are running on the structural and EVs. We are running today at the rate of approximately $150 million per year annual revenues. Could you repeat the second part, Juan?
Sure, yeah. So, but just to clarify there, so $150 million this year you're expecting in revenues from structural components, but is that more back-end loaded, or are we seeing a big portion of that kind of streamlined or evenly this quarter as well? Just to get some clarity there. And my second question was more about the margin, whether your aluminum costs are already passed through to your price, and this $15 per unit margin is kind of a run rate for the current business. Thanks.
Yeah, no, we're running at approximately this level today at 150, and we're expecting that by the end of the year, maybe we will be increasing that since we are ramping up some additional volumes, especially in our plants in Europe. Related to the aluminum, we are currently in negotiations with some customers. We are making some progress. We have not finished yet with all customers. However, we are giving this a first priority since this is a very important element for us. We have had tremendous dialogues and communications with them, and we will continue pursuing that to solve the situation as quickly as possible.
Okay, so there is still a gap in your current margin that's substantial, or is it minor?
Yes, we still have a gap related first to the metal lag and second to the divergence, and we are trying to fix this as quickly as possible.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Juan.
Thank you. Our next questions come from the line of Mauricio Serna with UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thanks for taking my questions. First, I would like to ask on the report, you know, you talk about operational efficiencies. Maybe you can, if you could elaborate a little bit more on you know, what is driving this better this improvements on the operations, and should we expect more of this on the quarter and on upcoming quarters? And specifically, you know, given that you provided a guidance which entails a 2% decline in full year EBITDA, but this quarter it was a 4% increase, does that mean that probably the next 9 months be a little bit tougher? Finally, just more on the long-term side of the business, when you talk about the backlog, you know, you mentioned now you're seeing a $370 million of sales of the new business lines. And that would entail, if I understand correctly, that's the amount of sales we would be seeing probably by the year 2020. So how would that reflect, if you could share with us, maybe in terms of volumes and market share, and where would that put you in terms of reaching the $1 billion target sales that you previously were discussing? Thank you, and congratulations on the results.
Thank you. Thank you, Mauricio. Related to efficiencies, this is part of the NIMAC DNA. We're always working to improve our cost, and we are making a significant more effort than ever to try to observe. We will continue with that. We have some efficiencies this quarter, approximately in the range of about 8 to $10 million dollars in general, and we will continue pushing our operations to become leaner and more efficient in every single region. Related to the guideline, we don't have at this time any news to change our guidance. We will continue with the same guidance, and certainly we will make best efforts to improve our results as we always do. Related to volumes, for electrical and structural components, as we have already indicated, we are making good progress in that regard. We think that we are becoming the number one, just behind some of our customers in this area. We're still very optimistic about reaching the $1 billion by 2022. We are seeing, as we speak, significantly more requests for quote on electric and structural components. One important element, Mauricio, that we are seeing today is the following. Based on the fact that in Europe, after the VW diesel scandal, that is affecting the entire industry. And remember that diesel applications are significantly more efficient than gasoline. So to compensate for that decrease in diesel, what we are seeing is that our customers or OEMs, especially in Europe, are making significant efforts to increase electrification as well as reduce weight on the vehicle. So we are seeing more opportunities than before. As we speak, we have significant more, let's say, requests for quote from almost everybody in Europe. And we are seeing a similar situation in Asia as well. So we are confident, again, that we will reach these levels by 2022.
Thanks. And sorry, but I don't know. I think your line got cut off in the middle of the first answer. You mentioned $8 to $10 million of operational efficiencies in the quarter. I just wanted to, if you could provide maybe some examples of that. And also, just very quickly, if I may ask too, regarding the rest of the world division, you know, it seems pretty concerning. You know, first, this last two quarters, the flattish volumes and a 40% decline in the profitability per head. Just if you could talk to us a little bit about that? You know, now down to $5 per head of EBITDA, just, you know, if we could see an inflection there, or how come, like, there's not really, like, an operating leverage translating into the margins in that particular division? Thank you.
Coming back, I'm sorry, probably we don't have a, let's say, a good connection. We apologize for that. But trying to come back to some of the explanation, as I indicated, we saw some improvements in our efficiencies. Certainly, we are targeting to improve our plants in every single element, labor cost, manufacturing cost, as well as increase productivity, as well as quality. In that, we have a focused effort to that regard, and we are seeing some efficiencies, and we will continue, as I indicated, pushing all our plants and business units to improve our efficiencies. This is, as I indicated, part of the NIMAC DNA, always looking to get the best and most competitive cost out of our products. We are also, I don't know if we were cut off, but I wanted to repeat that we are making good progress on the structural and EV components. We are gaining market share. We are having a great success in terms of the quotes in which we are participating. And as a proof, we have already won this quarter interesting contracts. One that I was very proud is the fact that we won for a German OEM for the vehicle that it is, or vehicle line that it is one of the most selling vehicles in Europe. And as I indicated, we are seeing a significant shift in Europe, mainly due to the fact that they need to compensate for the loss of diesel applications and meet the very stringent regulations that they have in Europe. So they need to move fast for more electrification and lower weight on the vehicles. So we see opportunities to capture additional volumes in that regard. Related, Mauricio, to some of the results that you saw in the rest of the world, mainly that is affected by two main factors. The first one is one of our main customers in China is changing two models for two vehicles in this at this time, and we are seeing some impact because of that customer is losing some sales. We are, let's say, confident that once they launch the two new products, that volumes for the second part of the year will recover. And in South America, one of the things that we are seeing as we speak is that most of our customers are preparing for growth in the region, and they are asking us to increase capacity as we speak, and we are working 7 days a week just to keep up with demand. That has, to some extent, been very costly for us. Besides, we are launching, as we speak, 10 new products in South America. We expect that once we launch these products, we will recover, especially because these products come with higher value-added prices and as well as more complexity. So we are confident that we will see better results as we move this year.
Thank you. That was very helpful. And congratulations on the results.
Thank you.
Thank you. And once again, as a reminder, you may press star one to ask a question. Our next question comes from the line of Valentin Mendoza with Banorte. Please go ahead with your question.
Hello, Armando, Alberto. Thank you very much for taking my question. It is also related to the operating efficiencies, the target that you just mentioned for the second quarter, around $8 to $10 million. I was wondering if you see any further room to increase those efficiencies, especially given the recent, let's say, concerning rally in the aluminum prices, has to be able to sort of offset that impact in your profitability in the second quarter.
Yeah, Valentin, just let me just clarify that maybe I didn't communicate this correctly. The efficiencies that I was referring were part of the first quarter. Certainly, we will make efforts. I am not already indicating that we will achieve these results on the second or third quarter. We will continue pushing our operations to get the best efficiencies so that we can achieve. But I just want to clarify that the efficiencies that I was referring were part of the first quarter.
Okay, thank you very much, Armando. Just a second, a follow-up question, if I may. And it has to do with the ramp-up that you're expecting for the coming quarters in higher value-added products to be able to improve the EBITDA per unit in the coming quarters. I was wondering if you could share with us like the time frame of when you're expecting this ramp-up to actually show in your results.
Yes, Valentin, this is Alberto. And yeah, what we have on our, as you know, on our pipeline has been more value-added products on our mix. We have a little bit more machining as well as more complexity on the castings. So those are gradually coming in. And I mean, there are, let's say, different times depending on the customers. But we are seeing since already a few years this gradual improvement in the content of our parts. So this year is no different than any other one. So we'll gradually be ramping up these products consistently. And that not only stops this year, but continues also next year.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alberto.
Our next questions are from the line of Von Tavares with Citi. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for the follow-up. Just another two questions on my side. First, just to kind of understand this quarter versus your full-year guidance, you mentioned, right, that this margin is still not fully reflecting the pass-through of your aluminum costs, and you're actively looking at operational efficiency to continue. So should we expect some type of revision to your guidance at some point, or do you expect some headwinds that you're trying to factor into your full-year guidance that may come up in the coming quarters? And secondly, if you can just give us a sense as well, you mentioned in your press release about some extraordinary expenses related to the new debt issuances. Could you quantify how much was non-recurring there, just for we're able to model your interest expenses in the coming quarters? And maybe if I may, just one additional question. It's just on that comment you made about in Europe, right, where you're seeing some pressure to products sold to diesel cars. How much of your sales in Europe still go to diesel today? Thanks.
Yes. Hi, Juan. This is Alberto. Related to your first question on our margins, I think, yes, you're seeing better margins this quarter as what we had last year, and this is pretty much incorporated in what we had calculated as our guidance. So as Armando indicated, no need to review guidance, or we're not anticipating reviewing the guidance for this year. Related to your second question around the financial expenses, as we share also on the last conference call, early in this year in January, we refinanced our 2013 bond. And part of that refinancing included certain fees to call an anticipated basis this bond. If you recall, this bond still had 5 years maturity. So to pay that bond, there were certain prepayment fees that we had to cover, and those were reflected and booked on this quarter. For that reason, almost half of the, a little bit more than half of the financial expenses recorded in the quarter was associated with this extraordinary expense. We should be seeing in the neighborhood of close to $18 to $19 million of financial expenses recurrently on a quarter-by-quarter basis.
Yeah. Just complementing, Juan, your question related to diesel. Diesel applications on a global basis represent between 10 to 12% for total NIMAC revenues. And to be more precise, for Europe, they represent approximately 30% of total revenues. What we are seeing is a decline, as I indicated, based on the fact that some of the customers are switching from diesel to gasoline. As we speak, we have lost already approximately 150,000 equivalent units this year. That was part already of our volume assumptions, since we anticipate that diesel will be going down, and certainly those we factor in our, let's say, guidance for this year. As we speak, also, we have been asked by several customers to try to switch our diesel capacity to gasoline. That is taking a little bit of time, as we have already indicated in previous conference calls. It takes some time to switch. We cannot just turn diesel to gasoline overnight. It takes some time. We need to make certain adjustments in the equipment as well as tooling as validation. It takes between 12 to 18 months to further transfer. One of the positive things that I like to comment is that there is no capacity open in Europe by any of our competitors or our customers. So they are asking us to from diesel to gasoline, and we are doing that as we speak. And we will continue. You will see later on that we will increase our share of gasoline applications. In addition to that, and let me just comment that this change in from diesel to gasoline presents to Nemak opportunities for growth, not only by getting, let's say, the replacement business that is switching from diesel to gasoline, but also they are forcing the OEMs to add more aluminum content to meet the stringent regulations that they have in Europe. And we will see more electrification or the penetration of electrification in Europe, as well as the increase in the structural component vehicles to meet these regulations. This is something that our customers are in conversations with us, indicating that they need our support, and we're moving in that direction.
Thanks. That's very interesting. If I can just follow up there. So as you look at some of these transitions from diesel to gasoline, and the gasoline, I guess, platforms also requiring a little bit more of your social components, do you have a sense of what's the change in kind of your penetration factor there, whether, you know, you stop selling a diesel engine block and cylinder head, and then you move over to gasoline plus social components? Is that an extra 20% more content that you sell on that transition, or is it double the amount of content? Just to get a sense of what that factor could be as you get ready to supply those models.
Yeah. No, to be totally honest with you, Juan, we have not estimated what will be the additional content. We see better opportunities, but I think we can answer that call probably on the next conference call, or that question on the next conference call. We can give you an estimate of what will be, let's say, the potential additional content. But absolutely, just by making some quick calculation, diesel is 30% more efficient than gasoline. So every vehicle that it is reduced from the fleet, they need some type of, let's say, compensation to meet. They have, let me just go back. All the OEMs in Europe are forced to deliver 95 grams of CO2 by 2021. 2021 is just around the corner. And based on this change, since they were, let's say, using on the product portfolio approximately just 2 years ago, before the diesel scandal, Volkswagen diesel scandal, the percentage of diesel applications in Europe was about 50%. 50% diesel, 50% gasoline. Now it's approaching 40%, and it is moving rapidly down. So they will need to find ways how they can compensate, and they can meet these very tough requirements related to CO2 emissions as well as fuel efficiency. But to be more precise, we will try to understand what would be the potential additional volume, and we will come back to you next conference call.
Great. Thank you. Very helpful.
Thanks.
Our next questions come from the line of Manuela Ecavario with Credicorp Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. My question has been answered. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Our next questions come from the line of Alejandro Azar with GBM. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Most of my questions have already been answered. Just one quick one. If you could mention the amount of expenses for the launching expenses during the quarter and the metal lag, could you please quantify those?
Sure, Alejandro. This is Alberto. As Armando highlighted, most of those launching expenses took place in South America as we're getting ready for the launches of new programs there where we're gaining share and we're anticipating important growth. So that amounted for about $4 million of expenses, let's say additional expenses versus anticipated or versus last year in 2017. And related to the metal lag, that amounted to about $6 million of effect of metal lag, both the divergence as well as the lag, traditional commercial lag.
And a follow-up regarding your remarks on the aluminum price increases during April, Alberto. Do you see any impacts in the short term for at least the second quarter?
Well, it's hard to anticipate at this point. The market has been, as I indicated, very volatile. We need where it's gonna settle. Right now, I think it's moving erratically based on news. It has to do most of it with this issue around Rosal that I just explained. So we need to see how it works. And again, our exposure to that is fairly small from the supply side. So we need to see how at the end the primary aluminum prices settled and how that move on average. I mean, one single point or 2 or 3 days or a week doesn't make the whole cost for us on a month. So we'll need to see how the averages move from here on to see what that impact may be.
But again, one more, if I
The pass-through arrangements, remember, that we have with our customers help us move along those prices with the corresponding lag.
Perfect. And one more regarding your free cash flow during the quarter. If my numbers are correctly, you had a free cash burn during the quarter, and most of the negative impact comes from working capital requirements. Are these reflecting the new launching programs, or could you be more specific on regarding that account?
Yeah, sure, Alejandro, and your comments are right. The cash used in the quarter was mainly driven by this cyclicality that we have on working capital. Normally, at the end of the year, it's when the engine plants and vehicle assembly plants stop. So we have, let's say, a collection of working capital. But then, as the plants ramp up their production after the Christmas break, there is a strong pool of volume, and that generates an important investment in working capital. So the swings that we see during the year based on this seasonality are pretty much normal and very in line with what we have seen traditionally in the years. So not too different than what we have in the past.
Yeah, I mean the big difference I see between first quarter and 2018 and 17 is it's maybe twice as much your working capital requirements for this year.
Sorry, Alejandro, the line broke down. Can you repeat this last question, please?
Yes, it's regarding why is larger your working capital requirements than in the first quarter of 2017.
Good point. 2017 was abnormally a little bit better in terms of working capital, but again, that's more of a seasonality. If you go back in years and you see 16 and 15, those cycles of working capital are relatively the same. So again, this quarter was no different than what we had expected and incorporated in our plans and everything.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, it should normalize as we move along the year, and at the end of the year should come back down again to similar levels of what you saw end of 17.
Thank you, Alberto, and congratulations on the results.
Thank you. This concludes our question and answer session. I'd like to turn the floor back to management for any closing comments.
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good day.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time, and thank you for your participation.